Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
It's Wednesday, the 21st of July, 2021, and this is Reconstruction with me, David Taylor, and him, Phil Bishop, from the Construction Index. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm warm. How are you doing?
Yeah, very warm. Yes, it's scorchio down here. I've been abandoned. I'm the only person in the house at the moment. Everybody else has gone to the beach.
Oh, lucky them.
Yeah, lucky them. Not so lucky us, but we've got a job to do.
Yeah, well, it's a very exciting day today. It's National Ask an Archaeologist Day today.
Is it really?
You can go on Twitter, hashtag Ask an Archaeologist Day, or is it, no, just hashtag Ask an Archaeologist, and you can ask them anything. Apparently.
Ask them, what's the capital of Bulgaria?
Ask them, what's for dinner?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know that. There's a day for everything, isn't there? Astonishing.
There absolutely is. I've been looking up all the list of these awareness days.
What's tomorrow then?
Well, they're more weeks than days, most of them.
Right, okay.
A lot of them seem to be related around health. You've got, you know, Deaf Awareness Week, Mental Health Awareness Week. These were in May, by the way. May was National Osteoporosis Month, Action on Stroke Month, National Walking Month. And then you had Deaf Awareness Week, Mental Health Awareness Week, World Hypertension Day on the 17th of May. 19th of May with World Irritable Bowel. No, it's IBD, not IBS. Beg your pardon, it's Crohn's, whatever. Inflammatory bowel diseases.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
And so they go on. This month, World Hepatitis Day on the 28th of July. What else have we got? Also today, in America, it's National Hot Dog Day. yesterday in America was National Lollipop Day. So it's always something day or something week. Next week we've got, the 24th of July, when's that? That's Monday, is it? It's Samaritan's Awareness Day. These are all mostly, I'm not quite sure about Hot Dog Day, but mostly good causes.
Mm. Of course, we're right in the middle of a week, aren't we?
Yeah, well, yeah, this week, and I've said this because I can't find this on any of these lists of awareness days which I've been Googling. It's apparently Net Zero Week.
That's official, is it?
Well, I believe it's a BSI thing. They appear to be behind it. The British Standards, are they an institute or institution? And as the name suggests, it's to promote awareness of net zero. I think it's particularly for the built environment. Certainly the built environment is going gung-ho towards it, which explains why we've had two or three big stories on the Construction Index website this week about net carbon, net zero plans to get there by 2050, so on and so forth. This all goes back, for anyone in the short memory, to the amendment to the Climate Change Act in 2019, where the government said we're going to go beyond the Climate Change Act, we're going to make the UK net zero carbon emissions by 2050, which is a big undertaking, and it means shed loads for the construction industry, as we've talked about many times before.
Yeah. So, of course, nobody would have been aware of that, so that's why we need a whole week devoted to it. Is that right?
Well, the implication seems to be that next week we can forget about it and think about hot dogs and lollipops instead or something.
I'm a little bit curious, Phil, because I looked into this as well and I didn't notice that the BSI were involved with it. So I don't know where you were looking. I mean, I looked up Net Zero Week, National Net Zero Week, 17th to the 23rd of July, 2021. It seems to be sponsored and organised, well, certainly sponsored by an organisation called Northern Gas and Power. Did you find that?
I saw them as a sponsor.
Yeah. Well, they're all over the homepage.
It may be what I was looking at was the BSI are organising events. On the back of Net Zero Week. So maybe they've not organised. I don't know if it is organised as a week as such. And how you, I mean, how does one declare these days and get them taken up? But anyway, we've had the Construction Leadership Council and Highways England and other people, Association for Consultancy and Engineering, putting out things this week, timed, pegged to the fact that it's net zero week. And I actually think, the thinking is behind these awareness weeks. It's a great week to get the press interested in your topic and get coverage for it. But actually, I've had so many blooming net zero awareness things this week that I haven't had a chance to report on them all. So you'd be better off staggering them. And if you just, you know, if people sent them at different times, I'd have a chance to put them all up.
Yeah, but then maybe you need that focus for people to actually pay attention to it. I mean, I was sort of dimly aware. I mean, it was only by sort of yesterday afternoon I noticed that there was a marked increase in the number of people banging on about net zero via email. But I hadn't heard anything announcing the forthcoming national, you know, net zero week at all.
I don't know whether it's the journalist in me or the baby boomer in me, but I do have this typical sort of reaction against anything where someone says, this is the week you have to think about X or Y. I kind of go, I'm not going to be told when to think about what.
No, I'm the same.
And the idea, and the one that really staggers me is, and I'm sure if I was a woman, I wouldn't stand for it. Isn't there such a thing as International Women's Day?
There certainly was. I don't know if it's still going.
And women in engineering and women in construction.
National Women in Construction Day or week.
That's it. I mean, I'm gung-ho, all four square behind the sentiments. But it's kind of insulting and offensive. Even to me as a bloke, I think.
Anyway, that's beside the point. We're straying off here. We were supposed to be talking about Net Zero Week, weren't we?
Net Zero Week, yes. So we have a week to celebrate or to be aware of the need or the legal obligation to be net zero by 2050. So the first thing that I posted up was on Tuesday this week. Highways England publishes its net zero plan. We talked something about talked a little bit about Highways England's net zero drive last week, if you recall, with the electric lorries and so on. That consultation paper it put out on the timing of electric lorries replacing diesel. But the document this week is much more wide ranging in its scope. It talks about the three aspects to it. It's its own operations, Highways England own corporate operations, which basically means what they do in their offices and so on, will be net zero by 2030 with the help of 3 million trees that it intends to get planted, which immediately makes you and I go,
yes.
Okay. So if they planted 4 million trees, the boss could have a bigger Cadillac.
Yes, probably. Yeah, exactly.
But I'm being unfair. They're all going to electric cars. They're not going to have big gas-guzzling cars. They're going to electric cars and so on and so forth. But lots of trees and more practically, 70% of its road lighting will be LED by 2027. Mm-hmm. Next part of the plan is by 2040, maintenance and construction emissions will be net zero if all goes well. And then by 2050... all the vehicles on the road will be net zero carbon. There'll be no more petrol or diesel cars unless they've got a daffodil growing on the roof.
Well, that's something which is totally outside of Highways England's remit, isn't it? The vehicles actually travelling on the roads. I mean, are they saying that if somebody comes along in a 1920 Bentley, they'll say you can't go on our roads because you're burning fossil fuels?
That's a good point, isn't it? It's policing. That's a policing matter, I suppose. I don't think anyone else apart from the police will be able to pull you over for spewing. Or who is it? Who is it that... is there some other traffic enforcement agency that if you've got a really smoky vehicle driving down the motorway, I'm sure you can be pulled over, but...
Isn't it just the police? Oh, there's the vehicle inspectorate. Maybe it's the vehicle inspectorate. They can pull HGVs over and test them for red diesel and dirty exhaust and stuff like that.
There's the people, and they are part of... well, they're not part of Highways England, but they are part of the Department of Transport, I think, the vehicle inspectorate, aren't they?
I imagine so, yeah. But, that's a bit of a puzzle, actually, how Highways England can actually say they're not going to have, you know, carbon emissions from the vehicles using their roads. I don't know how they can do that without toll roads. They're almost do they mean they'll all our highways will be toll roads, and so Highways England will be able to prevent these vehicles entering.
Only the motorways and trunk roads, which is all Highways England has control of. But yeah,
well, maybe that's what they're saying. I don't know.
But I think the most interesting part of the Highways England plan for the construction industry is the goal to have by 2040 maintenance and construction emissions will be net zero. That means that all machinery on maintenance machinery will obviously be electric powered or solar powered or hydrogen powered or some such by 2040. And more radically, the cement, concrete and asphalt will be net zero carbon. Now, whether the cement, concrete and asphalt will actually be zero carbon or whether it just means the producers will also have to be planting 3 million trees somewhere. Yeah. We'll find out in June 2022 is the timetable for this. Highways England is committed to publishing a plan by June 2022 for net zero construction materials, cement, concrete and asphalt. They don't mention steel, but that's all part of it as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
Not much in road maintenance, but in road construction.
Yeah.
And the Lower Thames Crossing project is going to be a key project to test low carbon innovation. So anything that goes out to tender for the Lower Thames Crossing is all going to be driving and inviting lots of new ideas for low carbon concrete, cement and asphalt. But we've talked before, I know the cement and concrete sector has been doing an awful lot to decarbonise their business. And maybe we should get someone on in the next few weeks to explain what they've been doing to us, David, in detail.
Yeah, good idea.
Because I know they've come an awful long way, but it seems to me that cement and concrete has gone from really, really, really bad to still pretty bad. You know, it's still got a long way to go to be proper carbon zero. And I don't know how possible it is or whether we're going to have to start thinking of utterly, completely new materials.
Well, as you say, I mean, we'll have a clearer idea next June when this roadmap is published by Highways England. But I think it is certainly at the present time, it's difficult to get a grip on it. It's all rather intangible because, as you pointed out, when they say that cement and concrete and asphalt will need to be net zero carbon.
Net's the key word here, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Will it be intrinsically or absolutely net carbon, or will it be still producing emissions, but they'll have been offset some other way? So you've got this sort of daisy chain of offset schemes, and it trickles down, and the sort of end beneficiary, Highways England, can then claim by gathering in all these different schemes and net zero offsetting initiatives from their supply chain. They can say that the net zero, the net result is net zero for the highways network, if you know what I mean, because I'm not sure I do.
I do. I think the key difference is the difference between net and absolute zero. I cannot see that road maintenance, road building can be absolute zero. I just can't see it. But I also have a slight issue with, I absolutely get that the planet's going to hell in a handcart and we need to do something as a society, as a world, to save the planet. I buy into all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But does it have to be absolute zero carbon? I mean, for thousands of years, people were, you know, lighting bonfires and fueling their houses on coal and there was no climate emergency.
No.
Isn't it enough just to rein it back? Isn't it? It's a bit like saying that we know that being an alcoholic is a bad thing. It'll give you liver disease and all sorts of other social problems if we're all going around constantly plastered. But a glass of wine with your dinner at night's okay, isn't it? I mean, isn't a little bit of carbon okay? Is that going to destroy the planet?
Well, it depends who you ask.
This is this absolutist attitude to it, that we're saying, right, we know that carbon emissions are the cause of the problem, therefore we're going to get rid of them completely.
Hmm.
Now, I'm no scientist. Maybe that is the answer. But do we have to be absolutist and quite so stringent on it? Or is there not scope for flexibility? I mean, hasn't the hole in the ozone layer healed over now, I read sometime? Or did I read that in a scurrilous publication? It's not actually true.
I don't know about that. I have to admit, I haven't heard anything about the hole in the ozone layer before, because back in the good old days, all we were worried about was aerosol cans. And the CFCs,
and pollution.
Things have moved on a little bit.
And air quality. And air quality is still an issue if you live near main roads. But on the whole, you don't tend to hear about people worrying about air pollution so much.
Well, let me draw a comparison when we talk about absolutism. Maybe net zero, an absolute net zero carbon emissions is an aspiration that we should be aiming for it. And the comparison I would make is with health and safety. You speak to any contractors, you know, their aim is, you know, zero accidents and incidents.
One accident is one too many.
Yeah, exactly, precisely. So I think everybody would admit that, you know, you can't achieve perfection, but you can aspire to it. And so, although, you know, there will be accidents, anybody who can call themselves a realist will admit that there will be accidents and injuries on construction sites because of the nature of the work, and people are people and they have human frailties, and those will occasionally surface. It's probably the same with carbon emissions. You know, we've got to aim for reducing them completely. If we fall a bit short of it, of the target, then, you know, we won't have achieved an absolute reduction, but we will have achieved the best we possibly can. And I suppose that's the justification. I mean, as I say, I think it depends who you speak to. There are plenty of people out there who are entirely realistic about the achievability of some of these targets. But I think the cultural impetus is towards not admitting that. And you have to say, no, we're going for zero. Because if we don't go for zero, then we'll start to compromise here and there, and sooner or later it'll only be 60% carbon reduction or something like that, which is why people, you know, you have people like Greta Thunberg breathing down your neck. It's enough to scare anybody into saying, yes, net zero, that's fine, we'll completely remove carbon emissions, because that's the sort of pressure you need.
No, I get that. There will be no change without a vanguard pushing it and driving it. And I said at the start that I completely get that we need to change and we need to clean up. But it's, yeah, absolutely. I mean, can I not just have one glass of wine with my dinner? It's my lawnmower. I'm worried about my lawnmower. I've had an electric lawnmower and it was rubbish. I like my petrol lawnmower. But you're not supposed to have lawns anymore, of course. They're out of vogue. You have to Your lawns have to turn to meadows.
Oh, well, that's easy. I mean, mine does that anyway. I just don't cut it. I've been looking out my window thinking, I must get out there. I mean, it's covered with dandelions and daisies and I don't know what those are, blue things are. But actually, I quite like the look of it, so I'm going to leave it there. A bit of strimming just to tidy up the edges and that'll do. I didn't know that lawns were now...
They're off-brand, off-message or something. Yes, lawns are bad. Because they need water, they need cutting, then if you let them turn like yours, they attract lots of creatures, which is all good.
Well, we talked about rewilding, didn't we? Was it last year we talked about rewilding?
Yeah,
and that did make me feel an awful lot happier about my own neglected patch down here. Because although I do have what I could call a lawn, I call it a lawn because I've got a lawnmower to cut it. You look on the other side of the house and it's a tangle of brambles and docks and everything else. And I just say that's my wildlife haven. Thank you very much.
Well done, you. getting back on topic... The other, we talked about the Highways England have got their zero carbon roadmap that they've published. Also this week, an interesting initiative from the Construction Leadership Council.
Yes.
They've got a division or a programme which they called Construct Zero, which, as its name suggests, is all about driving the net zero carbon agenda. And I'm full square behind Construct Zero. except for the wretched people who come up with the way that they write it. They don't write it as construct zero. They write it as carbon dioxide. No, they don't. They write it as carbon dioxide unstruct zero, because they write CO in the little lower two after the O. So CO2 unstruct zero. And of course, CO2 means carbon dioxide.
Yes,
so you might
think,
oh, isn't that clever? No, it's annoying.
It is annoying, yeah.
Just call it construct zero. Don't try and make people say carbon dioxide unstruct zero. So lose the little two, please, construct zero.
Well, it's got you talking about it, Phil.
Anyway, I've talked before about these people who use lowercase and funky little letter sets in their brand
name. It is annoying.
So anyway, the Construct Zero Performance Framework has been developed, published this week to coincide with Net Zero Week. Mm-hmm. And what this is all about, they use language I don't understand. It's a sector-level dashboard, David. It's a dashboard.
Yeah, I picked that one up, yeah. I don't know what it is either, so don't ask.
I think what they're saying is they're basically saying you can't achieve something if you can't measure it. So everyone's got all these targets fluttering around for how we're going to do things. We've talked before about the move from diesel-powered machinery to tailpipe emission-free machinery.
Whatever it is. Yeah, yeah.
And there needs to be, and this is the nettle that the Construction Leadership Council is grasping here, there needs to be some industry-wide measuring of progress of all these different initiatives, whether it's from architects, plant hire, contractors, specialist contractors, demolition world, all the different parts of the industry. They can all pile in on this dashboard and say, this is where we've got, this is how we're doing, so that on a quarterly basis, you will be able to read on this dashboard the movement of the construction industry. This is if I'm interpreting it right. And if I'm not interpreting it right, I think it's not my fault and they haven't explained it properly. But if I'm interpreting it right, every quarter we'll be able to see the progress of the UK construction industry. And I think it's UK. It might just be England, because they're a bit vague on that subject, because there are other leadership councils around the place. So they tend to gloss over what's UK and what's England. But at the end of the day, it's all the whole planet anyway. But there will be this map, this dashboard, they say, where you can see how far we're getting along with our target, where we need to pick up speed. And part of it is to educate the industry. And part of it is to tell the rest of the world that's on the construction industry's back. I mean, we've said before how much grief the cement and concrete industry get and the aggregates industry get. And they are doing a lot, and they don't get enough credit for what they're doing. They know they need to do more. But if they can show clearly what they are doing and what is being achieved, it might make the construction industry not seem such a bad guy and put it out there as, my goodness, look how brilliant the construction industry is doing to get itself to net zero carbon.
Yeah. So is this up and running yet, this so-called dashboard? I mean, can we go on there now and see what the industry's emissions are?
The first report hasn't happened. The first report is in the autumn sometime, I believe it says here. But you can go to Construct Zero Performance Framework as a website. The Construct Zero website is constructzero.co.uk/constructzero. And that will lead you to whatever is available so far. But we don't yet have the metrics. But this is all about...
I've had a look at that. It seems to be just one page.
At the moment. But this is all about... Yeah. And I think metrics is the key word here. It's measuring. How we can measuring the success or failure to move things along. What it doesn't do, though, I don't think, as part of this... Maybe it will do, maybe it needs to. And we haven't really talked about low carbon heating systems, decarbonising homes, moving to ground source, air source heat pumps. Because from 2025, all new buildings will be designed with low carbon heating systems. But we've got 27 million homes to retrofit by 2040. they're saying.
Actually, does that include yours and mine?
Yes.
Okay.
Especially yours and mine.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to be included in this dashboard. They are going to have a little chart somewhere that will, you know, tick off those 27 million homes. And I think when yours and my house gets retrofitted, a little champagne cork will pop out of the of the website and go,
yes, ours is the ultimate challenge. I caught my wife Googling air source heat pumps the other day. I didn't know she was that interested, but
we all have to be.
Well, I know. I had our boiler serviced back in February, and it's a gas boiler. We had it put in 2012, and the gas fitter who came to do it told me, yeah, it's doing quite well, this boiler. I said, well, I should think it is. We only had it since 2012. He said, yeah, well, I mean, it's past its use-by date. I said, eight years, that's what the service life is. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it's very, very...
That's like the mattress people. You suppose the mattress salesman will tell you have to get a new mattress every year. You'll get a broken back or something.
yeah. But I don't know how long a heat pump lasts, but hopefully longer than a gas boiler. But so it'll all be air source heat pumps soon, won't it?
There's one other net zero related story we posted recently. This was last week, actually, which might be worth mentioning in this context. A report by the consulting engineers OVAP and the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. I think this is about global decarbonisation targets. The building industry is responsible for 38% of all energy-related greenhouse gas emissions each year. And they're saying that the whole construction industry is all focused on the carbon emissions of the construction process. And we need to be looking more at the whole life footprint of buildings, the carbon of them, and assessing that, including end of use, how houses are, or buildings of, or not just houses, buildings are either deconstructed, refurbished, used, changed, whatever. And they're saying there needs to be a clear definition of net zero building, taking into account whole life cycle carbon. Yeah. Adopted, a new approach is needed by the industry. So that's quite an interesting topic.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's especially new though. I'm sure I've heard people argue that before. I mean, we're familiar with the concept of whole life costing. You know, spend a bit more up front, but it'll save you, megabucks in long term. I'm sure we ran a piece. Was it in the magazine or online about? This initiative to encourage people to design buildings to be dismantled and elements reused. My memory is really going because I can't remember. I think it was only in the last issue of the magazine, in fact, in the May issue, that it's all coming back to me slowly here, folks. Some consultant was promoting the idea that you should be able to, at the end of its useful service life, dismantle a building and actually reuse components. And I'm talking about not just crushing up the concrete and using it for fill on another project, but actually taking things like precast concrete beams and columns and using them as they are to build new buildings.
No, we have talked about this. We've talked about was it a Scandinavian study or something of recycling components, recycling beams and things like that. But yes, there's an environmental imperative there, but it's also a financial one. It seems to me, it's just efficiency and it used to be we talked about efficiency from a financial point of view, and it kind of leads on to. We did a piece this week on a new viaduct that's been designed as part of HS2, Wendover Dean Viaduct, which the Eiffage Kier Ferrovial Bam Nuttall EKFB joint venture is going to be building in the Chilterns. And HS2 put out its press release saying this is fabulous design viaduct, this, because it removes 7,433 tonnes of embedded carbon by clever design. What they've actually done is designed it so that it uses less concrete and steel, which is great. But anything you design when you design a motor car, you want to use as make it as perfectly engineered to be as light as possible, but as but heavy enough.
Yeah.
In the olden days, cars were all big, heavy, tank-like things, which were, you know, use a lot of fuel to move them. And engineering is all about minimizing resources, minimizing the use of materials, with maximum strength and durability, and so forth. So this viaduct that has been designed for Wendover Dean is, it strikes me, is perfectly good example of engineering where you minimise the use of materials, because that maximises the efficiency of the structure, minimises cost. But that's not what HS2 are saying. They're saying it's great because it removes carbon, and it's great that it's a decarbonising design. Now,
well, that's because it's net zero week, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. I mean, it's clearly good that it decarbonises it. But when did we stop worrying about money? I mean, it's let's you know, look to save money as well as saving carbon. I mean, they go hand in hand, of course. But it just seems to me that no one talks about money anymore.
Well, no, I take your point, and I think that this is a good example that the emphasis, the attention grabbing potential of something like this, is now the carbon emissions, the embedded carbon of a project. You know, saving the taxpayer money isn't as headline grabbing as saving the planet. So that's why they put the emphasis on that.
It might be when it's £100 billion. Project. I mean, the number of people are saying it's a white elephant and it shouldn't be built and we can't afford it and it's stupid. You're among them. I'm not. But £100 billion is an extraordinary amount of money to be built on this railway line.
Yeah.
So if you know, don't take your eye off the ball when it comes to money, folks.
No, right. I agree. I just think it is, again, you know, the people in the marketing department said we've got to focus on the carbon emissions because this is what will get the story higher up the agenda. I think we should point out it's a good design, and you know, they've obviously optimised the performance of the design and minimised, as you say, the resources required to deliver that. And so they should be applauded for that. But yeah, the carbon savings are just one plus point. There are many others.
Yes, and I'd like to, you make the point, they should be applauded. I do not mean in any way to diss the designers and the people behind the viaduct. It does seem to be a good thing. It's merely the marketing and presentation of information, which, with my journalist hat on, I find interesting. Do you remember earlier on the year we talked about consolidation in the builders merchants sector?
Yes.
How the private equity boys were getting in and consolidating it, and because there are a lot of mom and pop stores. It all sounds disparaging, that, and I don't think anything. Mom and pop stores are the finest kind of stores there are.
Regional independence.
Much prefer them to chains and you know corporates that make every high street look the same. So little independence, old hardware stores, four candles. A lot of them are being bought up by the bigger ones, and there's a lot of consolidation going on with the venture capitalists behind. Now, since we last talked, in the past month or so, a couple of recent developments have happened, which we haven't flagged up. Back end of May, Travis Perkins offloaded its plumbing and heating distribution business to HIG Capital, wherever they're from. I'm sure they're probably some foreign venture capitalist fund. I've no idea. Miami-based. There we go. Miami-based private equity firm are buying, paid $325 million for Travis Perkins, which is basically plumbing trade supplies is a big bit of it. Some other bits in there, Plum Nation, other bits and pieces. So that's Travis Perkins getting rid of that. And Travis Perkins also hived off Wix a few months ago. That became floated as a separate store. And I must admit, I went into my local Wix a couple of months ago, and it was looking a right old mess. And I know there are issues with stock supplies and shortages, but it looked like that someone there had stopped caring, frankly.
Well, that's a shame. I have to say that I was in my own, my local Wickes, just to balance the argument, I was in my local Wickes just at the weekend, and it was doing fairly brisk business, and it looked all right. So good. It must just be your branch.
Okay. Well, there are people in there, but it just, there's stuff scattered around. And
oh, right.
It's just a bit, yeah. Mm. Anyway, so that's Travis Perkins. The other big one is Grafton, who have sold off their general merchanting, traditional merchanting business in mainland Great Britain, which is primarily Build Base, Civils and Lintels, Timber Group and Bathroom Distribution Group. I don't know them, but I know Build Base, which is the bulk of it. 149 stores across mainland Britain. It's been bought by Hughes Gray, which is also a private equity-backed builders merchant, which has been growing rapidly in recent years on acquisitions. Nothing, they haven't bought anything as big as Build Base in one swallow. And in fact, by buying the Grafton business, Hughes Gray has effectively doubled, or more than doubled, in size in this one move. I hadn't realised, it kind of went unreported. Blackstone took over from Inflection the interest in Hughes Gray earlier this year. Hughes Gray had a big, I think it was a controlling interest, was bought by Inflection a few years ago, 3 years ago. And Blackstone, another private equity group, have taken it over this year. So another whoosh of interest from private equity coming into builders merchant sector. That will need regulatory approval from the Competition and Markets Authority. We can never prejudge this, but there might be the odd store that the CMA says you can't have. But I don't think that'll stand in the way. It should go through, I think. But it's, yeah, interesting. Lots happening there. And then related but different sort of reverse move on this. We reported this morning about the plant and tool hire chain, HSS. Mm. Publicly listed, loss-making, hasn't made a profit since it floated 5 or 6 years ago. They've got a new initiative, which is putting in hire desks, embedding hire desks into builders merchant, little independent builders merchant shops. The latest one is a company I'd never heard of them. Have you heard of Buttles in Leighton Buzzard?
No, they've never heard of them.
I think they've got half a dozen stores in the sort of northern home counties. And Leighton Buzzard and Enfield are going to have HSS hire desks. And I mentioned this to you, and you said, "Oh, that's not new, is it?" And I thought it was, but I looked around. There are a couple of others who have got HSS desks in them.
Like a sort of concession, yeah. HSS or other hire shops?
I don't know. I mean, it seems to be something that HSS are pushing. I know that, for example, you can go into the catalogue of some of these hire shops who, for example, some years ago, it might have been Speedy, but one of the big people with a big catalogue, there was some specialist niche equipment they didn't have, which is for installing glass and glazing. And so they went to, I think it was GGR at the time, who were specialists in glass handling machinery. And there was a couple of pages where you can go to, as I can't remember, it was HSS or Speedy, and they would be some other third-party specialists, someone who doesn't compete with them but can fill in niche gaps.
Right, yeah.
So you can...
Makes sense.
It widens out. It's rehiring, isn't it? We see it all the time. But for plant hire companies, rehiring to fill in gaps in their inventory is different, I think, from builders merchants tinkering into plant and tool hire by having a national chain's stall desk in their shop.
I'm sort of surprised that it hasn't happened before. I mean, it might have, as you said, I'm sure I've heard of it happening before, but maybe that's my memory playing tricks on me again. But I mean, when you think about it, tool shops and builders merchants serve the same customer base essentially. And there's a certain symbiosis there. Only, it does make sense.
I think only at a B2C level. Certainly when you or I are doing some odd jobbing around the house, that's absolutely true. And maybe for little local independent builder who's putting up a conservatory or something. But at the corporate B2B level of construction, I don't think that's the case.
No.
I think most big construction companies will go to for their tools, will probably go to I wouldn't say A plant, what the hell they're called now, but on the big players or Speedy or whatever.
But I think for SMEs, small to medium sized companies, certainly at the small local level, it will be more or less the same people using those outlets. And the chap who builds your extension or mends your roof or fits your windows, maybe not the window fitter, but general local builders, they'll use their local builders merchant, and then they'll go around the corner to their hire shop to get a floor saw or something which they wouldn't necessarily have in their own inventory. If you can get it in one place instead of having to go around the corner to get the other bit, then it makes good sense. But I also think that this is this HSS move is a significant one, because it gives them coverage, it gives them access to the market via somebody else's premises. And when I did our last sector focus feature on plant and tool hire, which was I think in October, October or November last year, and I had to look this up because I couldn't remember, but in October 2020, HSS announced plans to close 134 of its 240 branches. So they basically said, we're going to close half of our branches. Well, that obviously saves them money, but they need that exposure. They need the access to the market. So embedding yourself with your local builders merchant is a smart move.
Yeah, I think so. The background to this is HSS's financial problems. And you're right. I think this is a good way forward for them.
I mean, I think I'm a DIYer like you. I'd certainly find that handy because I might want to hire something while I'm buying the timber or whatever it is. But I'm sure that would be useful for builders, local builders as well.
But I think the issue is that hire and retail are different business models. So hire is an asset management business. Just because you can build, you're in the business of building property, doesn't mean say you want to be a landlord and letting it out. Now some people will combine it, but I think for a small local independent who's got the flexibility to be a retailer and an asset manager, that might work. Although I suppose HSS still manages the assets. I don't know in this model, but I think if B&Q went into tool hire and they had to have a desk with people like you and I trucking up to hire a whatever floor sander or an access tower for the day or something, scaffold tower for the day, I think it would present organisational challenges for them.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose I take your point about retail and hire being completely different models. But if you literally just piggyback on somebody else's operation, so HSS in this case, sort of renting space at Buttles,
I don't think they're even renting space. I don't know the detail of it. I don't think they're renting space. I don't think there's space to rent in that sort of size of store. I think they are simply providing a service. You've got HSS branding, and it'll be a Buttles person that's saying,
Right, that is different, yeah.
You want to hire some tools as well? We can do that, because we've got to deal with HSS.
Right, okay, yeah. That is different. Because
that's my understanding.
Yeah, okay, fine. Because, that is interesting, because they were talking, HSS were talking last year about focusing more on online business because, they were getting rid of their physical premises, presumably just keeping the stock, the inventory in sort of central locations, but actually hiring it online. That works, I'm sure, to a certain extent. But if you want to actually go and pick it up, then finding a convenient outlet is going to be helpful, isn't it? Rather than, I don't know, I suppose if it was a dumper or something like that, you'd have to have it delivered.
The other thing I don't know is how much stock, of course, Buttles are holding, how much HSS inventory Buttles will hold. I mean, that's a big issue, or whether you place the order at Buttles and it comes from some big HSE. It comes from some big HSS depot somewhere.
Yeah, well, that I think would complicate things, because the whole point of the exercise, I would have thought, or the one of the key factors for success is convenience. So, you know, going up to the hire desk in Buttles and ordering your floor sander or your, you know, your still saw or whatever it happens to be is one thing. But if you then have to wait for it to be delivered, or you have to go somewhere else to pick it up, then that defeats the object. You want to pick it up there and then with your nails and your timber and your cement and all the rest of it.
Well, let's see how it pans out.
Yeah. Well, look out for an HSS opening up in your local builder's merchant. It'd be interesting to see if this is rolled out, because I think this is the first time they've done this, isn't it?
I'm not sure how long it's been going on. As I say, there are a couple of others. Lords Park Royal and E.H. Smith in the Midlands.
Oh, right.
Five branches of that have got HSS posters up, at least. I mean, they're
oh, I see. No, I thought Buttles was the first. Okay.
No, I don't think it is, but I don't know how many of them elsewhere, but it seems to be maybe they've started it quietly, you know, in case it to see how it goes.
Interesting that it's the small independents that they're teaming up with. Presumably it's because the small independents have more to gain than, say, Travis Perkins or Jewson's,
and also more flexible, I think.
Yeah, I saw a story that you had posted this morning online, which was quite fairly ordinary. Story.
Hang on a minute, are you really accusing me of posting ordinary stories, David?
No, I thought it was the headline that actually alerted me, because I thought, well, as you know, a journalist should never actually become part of the story. It's a big no-no. But the headline is, "Another Maidstone Field Gone to House Builders." Where do you live, Phil?
What's that got to do with anything?
Well, I put two and two together. Bellway Kent has acquired a large green field on the southeastern outskirts of Maidstone for a development of 421 homes. But unless I'm completely mistaken, you live just south of Maidstone, don't you?
I live in southeast.
Are you being a NIMBY?
Sorry,
here?
Southwest. I live in southwest Maidstone. But there has been an awful lot of building on green fields of Maidstone in the past 10 years. The council are just saying, it seems to me, yes to everything. Mm-hmm. The only benefit so far we've seen is that there's one field near me. It's a farmer's field which looked like it was headed for development because it had an estate agent sign standing in it for years and years and years. Has now been acquired by the neighbouring villages of Munis Association and planted as woodland in exchange for land of about five times the size, it seems to me, on the other side of that village, which has all been built, housing has been built on. So at least we've had a wood planted.
Yeah, that's good.
But Maidstone has been massively built on. Some of the small developments are really quite nice, actually. Mm. I have no problem with that. But the bulk volume stuff that's been going up, I don't know what its design life is, but it looks terrible, and it adds nothing to the countryside. And traffic in Maidstone doesn't move; it's gridlock. But fortunately, we don't need. It doesn't matter that we've got gridlock, because Bellway are giving us $100,000 for cycle paths, so we're fine.
Excellent. So on your bike,
I'll have to get one of those electric ones, so battery powered ones, because I'm too much of a coward for a motorbike, and they're not eco anyway, and I'm too old for a push bike.
Well, I mean, Maidstone, I'm sure, isn't a special case. I've mentioned on this podcast before that in my neck of the woods, there's an astonishing amount of housing being built, and it only seems to be accelerating.
They're all second homes, though, aren't they?
Well, no, they're not. I mean, I think the big one down here is Redrow, and they're building typical Red Row homes, quite honestly, rather unremarkable.
Oh, they're one of the better ones, I thought. I mean, looks wise, I have never been inside and tapped on the walls, but
no, neither have I.
Architecturally,
I mean, they look all right, but I mean, you know, here we go. We could be talking about house building for the rest of the day, but you know, they're reasonably inoffensive. They tend to be crammed together. It's the spacing. I mean, if you get a large detached executive house, you want more than about 4 meters between you and the next one in order for the design to work. Tends not to happen, though. But no, there's areas being developed all over North Devon. And the thing which confuses me is I've got no objection to any of the sites, actually, that they've built on. They all seem to be fairly well chosen. Is what are these people going to do? Because this part of the world is not, unlike Maidstone, within commuting distance of a major conurbation, and Bristol and Exeter are both a fair distance away. I suppose Exeter's commutable. So I don't know where these people are going to work. Maybe they're all going to work from home like
that. They all work from home. Everyone does remote working these days, haven't you heard?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because I'd never get out. Yeah, so there we are. Anyway.
I think we should get out, David. I think we should call it a day, stop talking, look at that sunshine, and spend 5 minutes walking across our respective paddock meadow/lawn.
Wildlife reserve, yeah.
Breathe in, breathe out, again, get back to work again.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Enough of this.
I wonder what week it's going to be next week. What should we celebrate next week? Something awareness
National
week.
National Athlete's Foot Week.
The Olympics coming up.
There we are then. I think if it isn't going to be National Athlete's Foot Week, then we ought to do it.
Okay. Oh, Cycle to Work Day, 5th of August.
Fantastic.
Now, I don't mind that if you only have to cycle to work one day a year. I could cope with that. It's like take your kids to work day. Fine. One day a week, fine. Just not, not all the time. National Women's Day, no, they can have the whole year. They can have the whole year. Exactly. Cycle to work, one day's enough. Right, enough wittering.
All right then, Phil.
Sorry, folks, we've been going on. But thank you, everyone, for listening again. But for another week from Reconstruction, this is myself, Phil Bishop, and him, David Taylor, saying thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.